This is Guildcast, episode 15, for February 19th, 2006. Welcome back to Guildcast, everyone. I'm your host, Sean, and that song I just played was called Bleed the Colors by Noise Union, and it's kind of a theme song that actually goes along with this week's theme, which is dyes and dye mixing. I'm going to talk all about how to dye your armor, how to dye weapons, different things like that, what the different combinations do, and mainly I'll provide some good links to some dye charts that I found online that are really helpful and have been researched really well. And I'll provide those in the show notes later, as well as a link to that band, Noise Union, who did that song, Bleed the Colors. But first, I wanted to stay with tradition and thank some of the people I've met in the game. I haven't really played that much this week at all, so I haven't been able to talk to too many people. But I'd like to say hi to Chaos Dark Ranger, Bigfoot the Mighty, and Severus Skullpicker. And last week I mentioned Amber Red, where we talked about his guild recruiting and everything. And he wanted me to point out that it's Amber Red with two D's, AmberRedd, in case someone can't find his name. Also, I got some emails this week, and one I wanted to read was from a character, Lone Wolf of New York, that's NY. And he asks me, he says, I was wondering, do you have any tips for getting rich and getting lots of experience fast? Thank you for all your help, and how do I get Iway for my warrior? Well, as far as getting rich and getting experience quick, those don't exactly go hand in hand. Getting rich has to do with farming. Now, the best way to do that is that's not really something you can do right away in the game. You basically have to find something a little bit farther on in the game, like the Lightning Drakes, or a lot of enemies in the Southern Shiver Peaks drop quite a bit of gold. You know, you solo it, and you just kill these things for their money, for their gold. And that's, like I said, it's not something you can do right away. It takes some experience and some building up. And it's kind of a catch-22 because you can't really get rich right away in this game. And I think that's good, the way they built it. Now, I could tell you, if you want to really know the quickest way of getting rich in this game, it really has nothing to do with the game. It has to do with the website. It starts with an E and has a bay in there somewhere. Now, that's a way you can get gold that you actually purchase with real money, and I won't really give my opinion on that, because it's a way that some people see as perfectly fair, and some people see as perfectly unfair. So I'll just throw that out there as an option for you. Now, as far as getting experience fast, I would say the best way to do this early on in the game is to do the missions, because if you do the mission bonus, you get 2,000 experience for each one, and a lot of the beginning quests only give like 350 to 500 experience, and that's not a really great way to get experience fast. A lot of the earlier missions, such as the Great Northern Wall and Fort Rannoch and Nalani Academy and things like that, are really easy missions, and they're a real easy way to get 2,000 experience per mission. And then after that, after you start getting a little bit farther down, like once you get to the desert, some of those quests are worth 1,000 each. Actually, I think all of them are. And then there's the Villainy of Galrath quest, which is worth 4,000 experience. And then once you get farther on, believe it or not, for some of you beginner players who don't know this, once you beat the game, you do a series of quests which are called the Titan quests. And those are worth 20,000 experience each. And it's actually kind of odd that you know, once you get to a point where you don't level anymore, you can get these quests to get insane amounts of experience. But that's just, you know, that's a way you can do it after you beat the game, though. So I hope that answered your questions. Now, as far as the Iway, you asked how to get Iway for your warrior. Now, as far as the skill Iway, which is I Will Avenge You, that skill can be obtained by Captain Greywind in the North Krita Province, Master Scout Kira in Henge of Denravi, and Dak in Emberlight Camp. So the earliest you can get that skill is Captain Greywind in North Krita Province. Now, the Frapper map that I put up last week has been doing pretty well. I believe I have 44, 45 people on there now, which is just a fraction of the listeners. But I still find it very interesting, all the different places that people live. I believe right now we have 5 continents covered. 5 out of the 7, which isn't bad. for a little podcast about Guild Wars. So the only continents that I need now to continue with my world domination is South America and Antarctica. Now, Antarctica I don't see happening unless someone is a South Pole explorer and they happen to play Guild Wars. But South America, I know I have some South American listeners out there. I've checked my stats and I have some people in Argentina and Brazil who listen. So maybe I can get 6 out of the 7 continents. I think that'd be pretty nice. Although I am happy with what I got now. We got North America, Europe, Asia, Australia, and Africa right now. So I think that's pretty exciting. And also another feature I've added to the website this week is a links page. Right now, it's banners that I've made for listeners to use on their websites. And I think it would be perfect for, like, if you had a guild website, if you own a guild or if you are an officer in a guild, you can grab one of these banners off here and throw it on your site as kind of a promotion for Guildcast, if you'd like. And eventually, I'm going to make a links page on the site, which will be links to other websites. And it'll be a whole page full of banners and anything like that. So if you want to start sending in some banners now, or give me some addresses to some banners that I can get myself, I'll start collecting them now, and then later on I'll make a links page and put some of the best ones on there that, you know, that I choose. And the poll from last week was actually a tie. Last time I checked, at 62 votes, 31 each voted between if the Superior Salvage Kit was worth it or not. And the next poll should be up by the time this comes out, and it will be die-related. Now, I've got a new segment I wanted to introduce this week, and it's been something I've been working on during the week this week, and I'm really happy about it. I'm really excited that I'm able to bring on a new person on Guildcast. You may remember last week she called in and left a voice comment, and lo and behold, a week later, she has her own segment on the show. So I'm going to let her take it away and introduce her new segment.
Hey all, this is Lady Sinea introducing a new segment of Guildcast. Although I'm a monk, I do believe that you can't learn about the world by staying cloistered and hidden behind closed doors. You have to get out there, maybe rub elbows with a necromancer, or have a beer with some boorish warrior, or listen to the song of a mesmer. It's really only then that you'll truly come to understand your fellows, because there are just some things you can't learn from a book. That's why I decided to call this new segment of Guildcast, The Word on the Street. All kidding aside, Sean has actually invited me to become part of the show here. I found out about Guildcast around the time that the 5th episode or so came out. Of course, I started at the beginning and started listening to them sequentially, and it's been fun watching and seeing how the show has developed. I think Guildcast has really grown since its first episode, and I commend Sean for that. I began playing Guild Wars in the final beta right before it was released. The first character that I created was a ranger, since I'd previously been a big fan of Amazons in Diablo 2. As I played, I quickly realized that 4 characters wasn't enough, and I got myself a second account. So I now have 6 primary characters, 1 of each class, each ascended, so I'm pretty familiar with missions and most of the general PvE aspects of the game. I'm really bad, however, at player versus player. I've always been terrible at it in any game that I've played. So if you have any PvP questions, you probably don't want to direct them my way, or you might simply just get a blank stare from me. Now, this new segment, The Word on the Street, it's going to be mostly casual, and the topics will stay rather general. It may be weekly or a bit less, I don't know yet. I'll probably also throw in humorous pieces as well. I may or may not specify such by saying, okay, now this part's just for fun, but you'll probably be able to tell pretty easily and know whether or not to take something seriously. With the inception of the new skills and builds segment, which started last week, Sean will probably start leaning towards discussing the more technical aspects of Guild Wars. As for me, I've never really been one to particularly analyze exact stats in a game, so I'll be leaving that up to him and his guild Lost. I'm going to stick more to the general aspects of gameplay. Not to say that you shouldn't become more knowledgeable and become a more advanced player, but there's more to the game than just the formulas for figuring out damage per hit or things like that. So we hope that by covering both aspects, we kind of cover more ground, and it will probably be a nice contrast to have both sides represented, the more technical and the more general, so that we get both the advanced players and the newcomers who just want to learn about basics. Now, another thing is, I just want to say that anything that I say is not necessarily the same opinion held by Sean. In fact, we've often disagreed on what we thought were the best ways to go about doing something in-game. So, I just wanted to say that whatever I say is my opinion, and it should just be viewed as such. If you want to contact me, you can do so by emailing ladysinea@gmail.com. That's spelled L-A-D-Y, Sinea, S-I-N-A-E-A, which is Sierra India November Alpha Echo Alpha @gmail.com. This new segment is still in the works, so if you have comments or suggestions, I definitely would like to hear them. Now, this episode of Guildcast is supposed to discuss armor diet at some point. Sean's going to be going over this pretty extensively, so I'm going to try not to be redundant and discuss the same things that he already talked about. Farming for dye, I've heard, can be quite lucrative in pre-searing, and then after you get them in pre, bringing them into post and then selling them. I don't really know why it seems they drop more. It might be because you're by yourself and have no henchies, but some people farm by themselves in post as well anyway, so I'm not sure. But I have more than one friend who swear by pre-searing dye farming, so that's that. I haven't done it myself, so I'm not sure. Most guilds, though, have some kind of dye pool in which you all put your dyes together like a collective storage, and then people can use them as needed. I do that and just contribute the ones that I get, or I just hang on to the ones that I find, and then I hardly ever need to buy dye from anyone. Dye is an interesting thing because what you see is not necessarily what you get. I remember I had been trying to make some kind of nice sky blue or turquoise or aqua or something for my Warrior's 15k gladiator armor. One combination that I tried is I took a blue dye and I was adding different amounts of dye removers to it. So I tried three removers and the vial looked kind of purplish, so I didn't really think it would look very good. Then, to my surprise, when I put it on the armor, it turned out to be a gorgeous shade of gold. I mean, really metallic gold. So I ended up using that. I never thought that I would get gold dye out of a single blue. Now, I've heard that it's because the base color of the armor is showing through, and the warrior's base color is yellow. But I highly doubt that I would have gotten that same gold by mixing blue and three yellows. However, it seems that there are a lot of different ways to make the same or very similar colors. I've seen the different orange, silver, yellow formulas. They do different combinations in different orders to get gold dye. And I've also heard that if you mix some combination like orange and green, you'll get a nice gold. So I've never tried that, but my point is, it seems like people have come up with different combinations that they can use to get similar colors. You can use all the dye charts, the color charts, as a guide to kind of get you started, but I don't really put a whole lot of stock into those images totally, so I just use them for research and get an idea of what other people have tried, and then I just do my own thing. Pretty much like most anything in Guild Wars, there's no single right way to go about doing something. You'll probably find alternatives that no one else thought of before. Anyway, that's all I'm going to talk to you about today. Before I go, though, I'm going to share with you a few books that I've recently found that you might enjoy. There's, of course, the classic, The Tome of the Arcane, which I don't know where you can pick up a copy for yourself to keep, but you can read it if you go to the Sardellic Sanitarium's library. If you're into politics, check out Magic, Blessing or Menace, and also a book called The Black Side of the White Mantle. That's a very controversial one right now. A couple of nice pictorial histories, good for your coffee table, for your guests to peruse. It's called Tyria, Then and Now, and there's another that's called Before the Fall, Ascalon's Glory Days. In the self-help section, you'll find how to teach your kids about the searing and Coping with Loss, a Minion Master's Autobiography. And if you like humor, there's 1001 Uses for Charhides. Well, that's all I have. So until next time, this has been Lady Sinea giving you the word on the street.
Well, I thank Lady Sinea for coming on board. I think it'll be a welcome addition to the show. And it's just like she said, you know, it's going to be her thing and her segment. And she'll pretty much be able to talk about whatever she feels necessary concerning the segment subject, which is word on the street. What I'm also going to do for her is in the message board, I'm going to make a topic just for her where people can ask her questions on there concerning her segment. And like she said, you can also email her at the email she provided. Now to get into dyes and dye mixing, which is the theme of today's show. Dyes, if you're not familiar with them, there are 8 different basic colors of dye. There's red, blue, orange, purple, yellow, green, silver, and black. Now, out of these 8 colors, you can mix them to make just a multitude of other colors, where you can mix not only 2 colors together to form 1 color, but you can also mix 3 colors, 4 colors. They all have different results. You use dye by double-clicking on the vial of dye and then clicking on the item you want to dye. All armor and weapons can be dyed, although the effects vary among different equipment. When you use the same dye on different armors, they can look very different also. And it's advised to test out a dye on a single piece of armor before you dye your entire set, of course. Now, there are some items that dye differently than everything else, and we're not really sure why they do this, but a good example is the Chaos Axe. Other ones that have strange color results are the Necromancer Scar Pattern Armor and the Female Fissure Monk Armor. And I'll actually have links to some great websites that have pictures of the different dye combinations on these certain items, because they're unusual. So on the show notes, I'll provide some links to those. Dye added to armor and weapons can be removed using dye remover. But one thing to keep in mind is that if you want to change colors, like say you have blue on your armor already and you want to turn it red, you don't need to use dye remover first to take off the blue. You can just put red right over it and it'll replace it. It won't mix on your armor, it'll replace it. The only way you can actually mix dyes is in the vials themselves. Some weapons and armor cannot be dyed, such as the Eternal Shield and the Elemental's Headgear. There's some other ones too, but those are some main ones that can't be dyed. And also there's some other ones that only dye slightly. There's certain bows, I believe, that when you dye them, it only changes like a little, like the handle or something like that, a little tiny piece of it. So be aware of that. You can get dye from either dye traders in some of the major cities, or you can get them in drops from enemies when you kill an enemy. And of course, the more expensive dyes, such as black and silver, don't drop as often. They're pretty rare, which is why they're so expensive. Now, as far as mixing dyes, you can mix dye by applying one vial of dye on another vial of dye, or dye remover. That will also mix with other dyes. You can mix up to 4 vials of dye this way to make your own unique shade. But contrary to logic, mixing 2 vials of dye only nets you a single vial of dye in return. So, you know, it would make sense. If you had real dye in your hand and you mixed them together, you would have the same amount of dye, just a different color. Well, in Guild Wars, that doesn't work like that. If you have a red and blue and you mix them together, you basically have half the amount of dye because you're mixing 2 and you're only making 1, but you have that different color. You can also use dye remover in dye mixes. In this case, the remover acts as the base color of the item it's applied to. For example, if you mixed a dye remover and a green dye and applied it to the Necromancer armor, which is the base color red, the resulting color would look the same as if you had applied the red and green mix. So each class's armor has a base color. Like a warrior's armor base color is yellow, monk's is white, ranger's is tan, necromancer's is red, Elementalists is purple, and the Mesmers is green. And here's some tips for dye mixing. When you mix silver with another color, it produces a dull metallic version of that color. Yellow and blue usually makes a dirty yellow, although in some metallic armors it comes out as a light blue. Orange and green makes a filthy rust color. Red and green makes a nice orangish bronze color on some armors, and a dark brown on others. Red and blue makes lighter purple than the purple dye. Orange and purple makes maroon. Green and blue makes teal. Silver and blue makes a light teal. Silver and purple makes a slightly less vibrant shade of purple. Green and purple varies from teal to light purple, depending on the armor. Silver and red makes a slightly less vibrant shade of red. Silver and yellow and orange mixed together makes a nice gold color. Yellow and orange together makes a gold, but it doesn't have that metallic sheen that adding the silver would do. This is where, you know, you get a lot of people trying to sell the gold dye, where they say gold dye for sale 5K or something crazy like that. If you look at the components of this gold dye, silver, yellow and orange are not worth a lot of money. You can buy them for, I believe, 100 gold each from the dye trader, and you can get them a lot cheaper than that from regular people selling them. The silver is the only one that adds any kind of expense to it, but even that is not really, you know, you could buy it for 600 gold from a person. So this combination would only be 800, 900 gold to produce yourself, and people are selling it for, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5K, which I think is crazy. Now, if you mix silver and yellow together, and then you mix that with a silver and orange combination, that will make the pure gold dye. That's a little bit more expensive, and it's a lot better looking gold. Yellow plus green plus orange is another way to make gold dye. That's a cheap version. Yellow plus three silvers makes a white, and it's like a light yellow, but it's almost white. And that's where you'll see a lot of people selling white dye. That's the combination that they use. Either that, or they'll use silver dye plus dye remover plus another silver in that order, and that'll make an almost white combination. Now, if you mix any color with dye remover, it will brighten or fade the original color. For instance, on a warrior's armor, mixing green with dye remover makes an almost neon green. And if you want to make pink, that's usually accomplished by mixing silver and red dye. Now, I know I've went over these a little fast, and it's just kind of an example of the more unusual combinations that turn up when mixing dyes. And if you want to check out more about this dye mixing, I'm going to include quite a few links on the show notes for some really good dye mixing charts. There's also a chart for the non-standard dye effects, like the Chaos Axe, the Necromancer headgear, and the Fissure Monk armor. Also, the Frost Artifact is another one that has unusual effects. So be sure to check out the show notes for today and check out those links. Now, in this week's Skills and Builds section, I'm going to talk about the two Protection Prayer Monk spells, Protective Bond and Protective Spirit. I'll discuss the two in great detail and make comparisons between the two, but I'll leave it up to you to discover which one you prefer over the other. First, Protective Bond. While you maintain this enchantment, target ally cannot take more than 5% damage at one time. When Protective Bond prevents damage, you lose 6 to 4 energy or the spell ends. Now, this 5% damage in the description refers to the 5% of the enchanted character's maximum health. The energy cost of this is 10, activation time of 2 seconds, and it has a negative 1 upkeep. Now, let me explain upkeep real fast for future reference. Upkeep has to do with energy recovery. The rate that energy or health regenerates or degenerates is indicated by small arrows, also known as pips. Each pip represents 1 point every 3 seconds of energy recovery if the arrow points to the right, or energy loss if the arrows point to the left. The maximum number of pips is 10 at one time. So Protective Bond will basically take away one of your energy recovery pips. Now, this spell can't be received through any quests, but you can buy it from Avena in Maguma State, Teng Sao in Amnoon Oasis, and Dak in Emberlight Camp. You can capture it from any of these bosses: Leap's Thunderclap in North Krita Province, Gak Sploth Plunk in Watchtower Coast, Flume Banzo in Divinity Coast, Hearth Mendbranch in Talmark Wilderness, and the Tree of Vitality in the Wilds Mission. Now on to Protective Spirit. For 5 to 19 seconds, target ally cannot lose more than 10% maximum health due to damage from a single attack or spell. It has an energy cost of 10, activation time of a quarter of a second, and recharge time of 5. The quest you need to do to receive this spell is Blood and Smoke in Etten's Back. You can also buy it from Teng Sao in Amnoon Oasis and our good friend Dak in Ember Light Camp. This enchantment is actually the key ingredient in the Invincimonk or the 55 Monk build that you see everywhere. Now, another important thing to consider with all enchantments, but particularly useful with these, is that the order in which enchantment spells are cast is very important when you're up against a foe that can remove enchantments, especially when used with the Invincimonk build. Because if you cast the spell first, and then another enchantment afterwards, then those that you cast later will be the first to be removed. It's like stacking them up to cover up the first one. So say with the Invincimonk build that you cast Protective Spirit on yourself. Say you're a 55 monk where your health, you've brought your health down to 55. You cast Protective Spirit on yourself, and you don't cast anything else to stack over that enchantment, and you get Protective Spirit taken off of you, then you get one hit and you're dead. You know, especially if you're down in the Underworld or Fissure of Woe. So that's why it's very important to remember when you do that build that you want to stack other enchantments over this one. And another thing to remember in regards to these two spells is that if you're a Necromancer Monk and you cast one of these on yourself, they don't affect the sacrifice skills at all. For example, if you cast Protective Spirit on yourself, then you cast Veratus Sacrifice on yourself, which we talked about last week, you'll still lose the 15% health from Veratus. It won't be reduced to 10% from Protective Spirit. And these protection enchantments only protect from damage done to you by a foe, not damage done to yourself by yourself. Now that's going to do it for this week's show. Be sure to check out the message board where I'm going to have a little bit more information on some things, such as the running contest that we did this week, and it was won by the Shadowed Blade. I'll put up a little bit more information about that. And also about the next week's contest will be a trivia contest, and I haven't decided on a scheduled time yet, but I'll put more information about that in the message board in lieu of my schedule. And also be sure to check out Lady Sinea's new topic in the message board. And I hope everyone gives her a warm welcome to Guildcast. And if you want to get in contact with me, it's Sean@Guildcast.com. That's Sean@Guildcast.com. I'm also on MySpace at myspace.com/Guildcast. And also you can leave a voicemail for me at 1206-666-GWEN, which is 4936. So don't forget about that. So until next time, be sure to tell your friends, tell your guildmates about guildcast.com.